Hello from all of us at Macmillan Audio. If you enjoyed Case Closed, there's a new audiobook from Hannah Morrissey that we know you'll love. In The Widowmaker, a wealthy family shrouded in scandal, a detective tasked with solving an impossible cold case, and a woman with a dark past collide. Take a listen to the first 15 minutes right now, and then get the full audiobook read by Exe Sands and Adam Verner wherever audiobooks are sold today. This book is available now.
Chapter 1. Morgan. The key was a blackened talisman tucked into her leather cuff. She'd gotten in the habit of keeping it there since it had become the only tangible thing she owned, when 3 months ago her entire life was reduced to ash and ruin. The fire department had already come and gone by the time she arrived, her boots crunching on caramelized glass and stepping over hissing metal. Everything was wet and charred. Mannequins with their faces melted in. The once larger-than-life mylar tree shriveled to a root. Which meant that whoever had left the key had watched and waited, like a tiger stalking its prey. But Morgan knew better. Only humans tortured their food before eating it. A red balloon floated in the sulfurous haze, tethered to a small coffin-shaped box set on a step of the smoldering staircase. A simple note scratched on the back of an envelope revealed it was for her. My ruin. All roads lead back to home. A puff of vapor escaped her lips, a silent scream, perhaps, at the omen from beyond the grave. The only person who would have used that moniker was dead. The last image Morgan had of her Aunt Byrne was of her lying face up with her skull shattered on the concrete, mouth open to catch snowflakes. It was one of the few childhood memories she hadn't overwritten. Rather, she kept it sequestered in a safe place, so she could recall it at will, the way normal people preserved memories of their wedding day, or the moment their first child was born. Now, standing on the Reynolds' back porch, she turned her wrist and pressed her thumb to the key, tempted to free it from its holster. The iron stung. The key would not fit, she determined, as she considered the aperture in the ornate metal plate. All roads lead back to home. This was not her home. If the sea-glass-colored mansion at the top of the bluff hadn't tipped her off on her drive-in, then the 12-foot-tall Gothic gate that swung inward to grant her entrance to the estate made damn sure she knew she wasn't on her side of the tracks anymore. This was Reynolds country, she'd thought, following the cobblestone path that wended past topiaries draped in white lights and a pair of concrete tigers, their faces frozen in mid-roar and thick necks wrapped in festive Fair Isle scarves. Then she'd parked her salty little Honda Civic next to a newly waxed Land Rover and felt more than a little inadequate. The Reynolds family was enshrouded in wealth, status, and mystery, and Black Harbor's entire eroding shoreline belonged to them. What remained of it, anyway. Over the past decade or more, Lake Michigan had eaten away the limestone as effectively as the city's grim atmosphere gnawed on people's morals, if they'd had morals to begin with. In her 31 years on this planet, most of them spent here in this frozen purgatory, Morgan had learned that some people were born purely and inherently evil, and Black Harbor was their breeding ground. Morgan surveyed the snow-covered estate. Giant red bulbs hung from evergreen boughs, and three wreaths decorated the middle tier of a stone fountain. A lone lamppost wore a gold velvet bow, and to her left, fairy lights twinkled as they wove through the crosshatched trellis that would work well for group photos. It was creeping up on 2 o'clock. The golden hour would be here soon, when the sun was low and its amber hues came alive to brush its subject's skin tones with a warm glow. She raised her camera, snapped a test shot, and returned her attention to the door. Her worries melted away. It was just her and the keyhole. She felt the autofocus lock into place and took a photo. She could add it to her collection, the one she'd started since inheriting the key, of all the doors and their corresponding keyholes into which it didn't fit. not terribly unlike herself. Pierced and gangly, with a death stare that could intimidate a bull, Morgan didn't really fit anywhere either. Except the ruins. She'd fit there. And then it all burned down. Morgan considered the keyhole again and sucked in a breath. This wasn't home, and yet, was it so wrong that she wished it was? That her childhood had been spent here, running free through an orchard and pushing siblings on a front porch swing. Not curled up on the floor, left to lick her wounds like a dog and pray her door remain closed until morning. A gust of wind came and pulled tears from her eyes. She repositioned her gear bag slung on her shoulder and, turning her back to the wind, slid the key out of her cuff. It didn't hurt to try. With the key pinched between her thumb and forefinger, she reached forward when the door fell away. The woman who appeared behind it was so beautiful it hurt, Morgan thought, as she took in her verdant eyes and the short layers of russet hair that framed her face. She looked surprised, and Morgan suspected she hadn't anticipated someone who looked like her, dressed all in black with a pierced septum and two studs in her bottom lip, skin pale as the ghost of Christmas past, to be standing on her doorstep. "Oh," she exclaimed, "you must be the photographer. Morgan, right?" She shifted the chubby-cheeked toddler she was holding to her other hip. It stared at Morgan in that unapologetic way that babies do. Morgan estimated 1.2 seconds before the drool on its lip froze into a spitsicle. She nodded and slid her key back into her cuff. Later. "I'm Cora," the woman smiled, showing teeth brighter than fresh-fallen snow. Her lips were painted holly red, the same shade as her knit short-sleeved sweater. Goosebumps stippled her arms. "And this is Charlie. We were just about to get Mamo some ginger ale, weren't we, Charlie?" Her voice pitched and fell. How easily some people could slip in and out of baby talk, Morgan mused, and she wondered, was Mamo some type of nickname for Mom? Grandma? Just like Omi, Oma, Nana, Yama, and the cringy beyond all get-out Glamma. When Cora leaned over to grab a six-pack of cans resting atop a resin storage chest, Morgan stopped her. "I'll get them." "Thank you," Cora said, speaking like an adult again. "Come in, please. My mom will be so excited that you're here. You're her gift," she added with a quick glance over her shoulder. Morgan scrunched her brows. A gift? She'd never been anyone's gift before. And yet, perhaps that was how the people who'd paid her aunt had looked at her. A guilty little pleasure they'd never tell a soul about. Her throat felt dry. She licked her lips, tempted to suck down one of those ginger ales. Being back here had that effect on her. One breath of Black Harbor was potent enough to turn her devil-may-care armor brittle. She imagined watching it disintegrate and fall away like fish scales, leaving her raw and exposed while she served herself on a silver platter to the Black Widow of Black Harbor, Mrs. Eleanor Reynolds, whose husband Clive vanished 20 years ago. Eleanor was the obvious suspect, and according to the court of public opinion, she was guilty as sin. The $11 million life insurance policy she'd taken out on Clive just weeks before his death had been, for all intents and purposes, her hand hammering the nail in his coffin. And he'd had an affair, which meant he'd pounded the final nail in himself. Morgan's ears pricked at the sound of the door closing behind her. Noting that Cora wore only Fair Isle stockings, she heel-toed her combat boots off in a mudroom she doubted had ever seen a speck of mud. Plus, it was larger than the space she'd recently moved back into at her parents' house. She set the ginger ale on a bench to straighten the tops of her stockings, making them even, and hung her jacket on an empty hook. Her glasses fogged. "Mom," Cora called. Her voice carried through the kitchen, rose, and dissipated somewhere between the hardwood floors and the cathedral ceilings. "Morgan is here." Following cautiously in Cora's wake, Morgan set the cans of ginger ale on a granite countertop and waited. A current swam through the great room, fragrant with cloves and thyme and buttery croissants. It smelled of roast beef, too, and seasoned potatoes. The countertop boasted a trove of mini mince pies and single-serve sherry trifles. Adjusting her camera settings, Morgan took a few photos to show her mom the spread. Up until 6 months ago, when the highway construction shut it down, Lynette's Linzer's, her mother's bakery, had been a beloved staple of Black Harbor, serving homemade cookies, tarts, and biscuits on the daily. Now, it was simply one of dozens of vacant storefronts. Over the home's surround sound system, a slow piano melody melted into a chorus of accordion, flute, and bagpipes. As the song picked up, Morgan recognized it as Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues and smiled. Where was everyone? She wondered. Cora had gone and disappeared with Charlie down a corridor, and aside from someone who was clearly a caterer coming to check the oven, there wasn't a soul in sight. Had she gotten the time wrong? No, the email had stated 2 o'clock. She'd read it again this morning, to be sure. In a mansion this massive, there were a million places people could be hiding. Morgan looked to her right and surveyed what appeared to be the living room. Overstuffed gray couches that could have swallowed her parents' dinky little sofa formed an L shape around a glass coffee table. In the corner, between the stone fireplace and a large picture window, stood a tree that had to be 14 feet tall. Its branches dripped with faux crystalline icicles, expensive-looking ornaments nestled in its boughs, and a glass Swarovski star twinkled at the top. Jesus, had they jacked this tree from Tiffany's? Her gaze traveling upward and across the ceiling, Morgan noticed a lofted upstairs, where all the bedrooms must be. Beneath it, in the wide hall down which Cora had previously vanished, floated a radiant white-haired woman. She wore an emerald top cinched with a leather corset and flowy sleeves. Her smile and socks matched Cora's. Hello, said Morgan. I'm the photographer. Her voice trembled. The sight of Eleanor Reynolds here in the flesh had left her dumb. Morgan, what a delight. Eleanor beamed, revealing eye teeth that were sharp, stark white, and perhaps a centimeter too long. Spreading her arms, she welcomed Morgan into a straitjacket hug. You must be Eleanor, Morgan said. The devil herself. Eleanor raised her hands as though holding up praise. Eleanor's acknowledgement of her less-than-savory reputation put Morgan at ease. Your home is stunning, by the way. Her eyes roamed the Four Seasons room and the English-inspired kitchen with marble backsplash. A Prussian blue china cabinet fits snug in a shallow alcove, holding stemware that undoubtedly cost more than Morgan's entire education. And yet, on the counter beside it was a red rotary telephone. It looked out of place here, where everything was modern and cool-toned. Not to mention, who even had a landline anymore? Oh, thank you, darling. Mom was an interior designer for many years, chimed Cora, who had reappeared, sans Charlie. A home stager. She even designed sets for Hallmark. Eleanor rolled her eyes at Cora's praise. Nevertheless, she grabbed her daughter's arm and gave an affectionate squeeze. Puff pieces, dear, honestly. I should have done something important with my career. Cora is a child psychologist. Morgan lifted her chin as though she cared. She couldn't tell if Eleanor and Cora were displaying genuine admiration for each other or putting on a show. Help yourself, won't you, Morgan? Said Eleanor. They're setting up food in the dining room. There's wine, beer, cocktails, coffee. Nog, suggested Cora. Yes, nog, Eleanor repeated. Make yourself at home, really. Morgan smiled politely. She'd never heard anyone abbreviate eggnog before. The slang made these characters slightly more human. But then she'd never been told to make herself at home while on the job, either. She was used to shooting cocktail parties and corporate events that took place in warehouses and banquet halls, never someone's home, and certainly never in a murderess's mansion. A gentleman between Cora and Eleanor's age swept in. Morgan watched as his hand grazed Eleanor's waist. Eleanor twirled gracefully, turning her body toward his. Don, darling, this is Morgan, my gift. She's our photographer for the evening. Oh. Don looked impressed. He had a sophisticated salt-and-pepper aesthetic. If Morgan had to guess, she'd put him at 20 years younger than Eleanor. Damn, lady. Get it, she applauded silently. A pleasure, he said, and offered his hand for her to shake. The second Morgan offered her hand in return, jingle bells tingled from down the hall. The front door opened, and Reynolds' friends and family members filtered in, all toting decorated sacks and gifts wrapped in craft paper and twine, ironically rustic. Morgan watched them with shameless fascination. They looked like they'd just stepped off the set of a photo shoot, so cozy in their chunky knit sweaters, moms and daughters wearing matching suede boots, gentlemen in flannel shirts that had never seen the elements for which they were intended. A little blonde boy wore a marbled cardigan with elbow patches. Crouching, Morgan snapped several photos as he ran off with his cousins. There had to be 40 people once everyone arrived. Kids crawled beneath tables and thundered up and down the staircase. The clamor of conversation drowned out the Celtic Christmas music. The women clinked their wine glasses, men guffawed and sipped dark beer. Morgan captured a photo of a freckled girl wearing angel wings and a tinsel halo, eating a powdered cookie. You know, you can eat the food too. You don't just have to photograph it. Morgan stood and turned to find the source of the suggestion. A man sat on the sofa, legs casually crossed, clutching a bourbon neat. He looked to be about her age, early to mid-30s. There was something about his eyes, dark like his drink and salient, that made her feel as if he was looking through her, not at her. She swallowed. What did he see?
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.